Way, way, way back in 2014, a fierce battle brewed in the realm of condiments. Unilever, the titan behind Hellmann's and Best Foods, unleashed its legal sword against Hampton Creek, champion of the new-to-market vegan condiment, Just Mayo. The charge? None other than the very essence of mayonnaise itself, the absence of egg. The stage was set for drama, and while legal duels unfolded, a sinister shadow war simmered in the background, a covert whisper campaign orchestrated by none other than the American Egg Board unleashed an army of food bloggers turned covert agents, their feather quills sharpened like chicken claws, spreading a pro-egg message.
Welcome to As We Eat, where we explore the intersection of food, family, history, and culture.
We think there's something magical that happens when people get together and share food. Conversations seem to happen a little more naturally. We talk about our commonalities and our differences. We share stories, memories, and recipes.
And we'll use food to take a journey that explores our human experience. Share some fun facts and some that aren't so fun. Talk about food history and how food connects and defines us.
So if you've ever eaten, prepared, or shared food, then this podcast probably has something for you. Hi, Lay.
Hey, Kim. How are you?
I'm fabulous. Still feeling the fire of spring running through my veins. It's gorgeous here. Still a little chilly, but the sun's out, and that's making me think about farmer markets, eating yummy, fresh spring vegetables. And I'm eyeing some t-shirts and shorts that are about ready to come out into my wardrobe. How are you doing?
Nice. Yeah, beautiful here too. The last couple of days have just been absolutely spectacular. We had a fire last night, so it was so fun just to sit there, stare at the mountain, hold on to the puppy as much as she would let us. But yeah, right? Gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous and loving it. Yes. And our farmer's market should be starting May, but we're excited about that too.
Yeah, May for us as well. It's a little premature, but I have big plans. I have big plans to eat. I always have big plans to eat, but there's something about spring eating that's also really fun, especially if you've gone through a winter of heavy foods and
yes,
lots of celebrations. So a lot of heavy, sweet, wonderful, delicious stuff, but you're kind of ready for that spring salad and those fresh veggies. So really looking forward to that.
Agreed.
Well, you know, I really love a good legal battle over food stuff. The case I cited in my dramatic introduction is true, and one that we briefly discussed in our 2021 Glorious Egg episode. But we're going to examine this one a little bit more closely because we're going to talk about some of the implications that came from this case and another. Now, Just Mayo was developed in 2011 by Josh Chetrick, who had invested $37,000 into creating a cheaper alternative to eggs through his ventures Beyond Eggs and Hampton Creek. Just Mayo, which does not contain eggs, took 2 years to develop. Hampton Creek's research team screened 1,500 plants before finding 11 suitable for emulsification, a key component in making mayonnaise. That's what gives it its unctuous, velvety quality. Ultimately using a specific variety of Canadian yellow field pea as the egg substitute. So again, this is 100% vegan. It contains no animal byproducts at all, hence no eggs. Now Unilever, producer of Hellmann's and Best Foods mayonnaise, sued the Hampton Creek producers of Just Mayo on the grounds that it could simply not be called mayonnaise because the product is known to use pea protein instead of egg, and mayonnaise as a process is known to contain egg. This is very much like we discussed in our last episode. When a product offering actually deviates from a familiar production method, it can be construed as mislabeling. The FDA requires that mayonnaise contains 65% vegetable oil and at least one egg yolk containing ingredient. And Just Mayo contains ingredients such as pea protein, beta carotene, and modified food starch, none of which are used in mayonnaise according to FDA standards. Now, Unilever also noted the use of egg-oriented imagery in Just Mayo's promotional materials and stated that it was offering a false claim that were, quote, part of a larger campaign and pattern of unfair competition by Hampton Creek to falsely promote Just Mayo spread as tasting better than and being superior to Best Foods and Hellmann's mayonnaise, end quote. Now, this particular legal battle didn't actually get very far. The actual legal suit was dropped in 2015, and Hampton Creek did revise its packaging to clarify that just mayo was being defined as being guided by the principles of reason, justice, and fairness, not that their product contained just mayonnaise. It's actually a pretty good distinction to make.
I was just going to say, it really goes back, like you said, it goes back to this, the margarine episode, and the fact that the FDA has defined, and this is where the Oleomargarine Act put into effect what butter actually was, because margarine was trying to act like butter, look like butter, taste like butter. So that act defined exactly what could be called butter and what couldn't. So it, in all fairness, you really shouldn't be able to call a condiment that doesn't have eggs in it. If that's how we're defining mayonnaise, then it shouldn't be able to be called just mayo.
It's funny, this idea of what we put on our labels actually came up after our margarine episode, because a friend said to me something along the lines of, what about products like, I can't believe it's not butter, like it calls itself butter on the packaging. And I had to point out, but it's actually literally telling you it's not butter.
Right.
The whole campaign is about how similar it is to butter, but without being butter itself. Totally legal, can totally get away with it. That is actually oranges and apples. We are not apple to apple. But it was interesting to me how they hadn't already drawn that conclusion, because what they had focused on, which I believe what the makers of It's Not Butter are wanting, is the association with butter, and yet very clearly saying, but it's not butter.
Right.
So this is what was on the surface of the Just Mayo versus Unilever case. But there's a lot more that was going on down behind the scenes. And that is that the executives at American Egg Board, which was formed in 1976 under a congressional mandate as a commodity checkoff program, and there are a whole bunch of them, and we're going to have to talk about that whole group another time, because it's watermelon, egg, milk, of course. The list of commodities is actually quite extreme. The American Egg Board was specifically founded to promote egg agriculture. Or agriculture? Anyway, those executives at the American Egg Board, or maybe egg executives, not only spent approximately $59,500 in a two-year covert whisper campaign meant to subvert positive publicity about one company and one product, and that was Just Mayo. Not only did they do that, they had some back channel chatter about maybe pooling some resources to, you know, maybe fund a hit on Josh Tetrick, the Just Mayo founder. Now, they didn't really fund a hit. That it was determined that that was meant to be humorous. Some people have some interesting definitions of what humor is.
Right.
But the truth is that the American Egg Board did hire a top-tier Chicago public relations firm to plant, quote, USDA-approved, end quote, pro-egg messaging with influential food bloggers, and also produced pop-up advertising meant to outrank, replace, or obscure content when users searched for Just Mayo, Hampton Creek, or Josh Tetrick, specifically targeting this one company. Apparently, they felt so threatened by the idea of veganism in the egg market space that they went to the lengths to do this. Now, this is above and beyond their mandate. The USDA Agricultural Marketing Service investigated, and they did find that the American Egg Board's focus on a specific company's specific product and all of its efforts to undermine, obscure, and diminish their market offering was inappropriate and far exceeded its 1976 bylaws and its mandate for how it spends its estimated $20 million of funds that it collects from egg producers to promote the egg industry. At the time, the American Egg Board chief executive Joanna Ivey entered into sudden and early retirement, and that was kind of it, almost. After recalibrating the brand's Just labeling, as we had mentioned, Just Mayo quietly disappeared from grocery store shelves, actually until about February of this year. It just announced a few weeks ago that it's relaunching the brand with four flavors. What I find really compelling about this whole situation, though, was how far that not only Unilever was willing to go to put down the underdog, but also how far the American Egg Board itself was willing to go to protect its commodity, to the point of pretty much almost destroying a market innovation.
Absolutely. And again, to jump back to the margarine conversation and the senator who said that once the Oleomargarine Act was signed, that he really didn't care if any revenue was raised at the state or federal level. His real hope was that this would literally destroy this industry. It's very interesting to, again, see this American Egg Board, who was sanctioned to promote eggs, not destroy industry, right, has this covert operation to sabotage a product that was being made for a specific group of people who clearly did not support the egg industry in any way. The thing that I find really interesting about this is how they employed the internet, right? Mm. You have bloggers, and I was reading an article about this, influencers, and this was before we had the word influencers, but that's what they were looking for, was these influencers that could promote the eggs and the whole Google ad trickery.
Yeah.
In order to, so if I'm looking for Just Mayo, I don't get that. I get all of these other things that are clearly unrelated to my vegan, not that I am vegan, but if I were, to my vegan lifestyle. And that's terrible. That's wrong on a lot of levels.
Yeah. There's a massive amount of manipulation that goes on behind the scenes. The American Egg Board was caught in its manipulation. That's yes, the thing that I think we really need to point out and talk about here. They were not so secret about it that they weren't caught. And this, we're doing research on corporate espionage and corporate sabotage at this level, actually it proved to be really challenging because you have to have proof of it being done in order to really say that it was done. Often when there's smoke, there's fire. And I think that sometimes you can construe that some kind of behind the scenes manipulation is going on, especially with media. You see the results, but you don't always know how that fire was started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, what I think is really interesting about this case specifically, and it's something that we really need to think about, but this case is a really great example of the fact that corporate food brands are really less interested in the public's health and welfare and more interested in the bottom line. I get that they're a business, but you still have to have some ethics around that. And the lengths that they would go to destroy the competition. And as we saw in our margarine episode, it isn't just corporate brands. We have FDA-approved boards. We have senators who are looking to destroy competition, whether it's from an act that taxes a food product or utilizing bloggers, influencers, to the Google AdWord trickery that you saw in this campaign. So I think we need to be more aware.
And do I have a story for you in this vein? So we're going to take a brief sponsor break, but when we return, I'm going to tell you a story about another legal case that ended up garnering a lot of public discourse about the difference between personal responsibility and corporate responsibility. Stay tuned.
Ooh, I'm excited to hear this one. Spring is coming, and that means that there will soon be crops of fresh and tender vegetables to perk up our winter palates. If, like me, you find yourself craving some novelty, then Kim and I heartily recommend the delicious artisan oils and vinegars, salts and spices, chocolates and conserves, and gifts at Genesis Kitchen. Genesis Kitchen is committed to helping the foodie community find a wide variety of ethically and sustainably sourced food and pantry items. My favorite is the Barnacle Kelp Chili Crisp, and Kim won't stop talking about Teeny Tiny's organic curry spice blends. And if you're looking to share a little food love with someone special, there are a variety of gift sets that Genesis Kitchen has especially curated to whet the appetite. If you're local to the Flathead Valley, visit them at their Columbia Falls location. If not, they're just a click away at genesis-kitchen.com. This episode is sponsored by Genesis Kitchen. Use the code ASWEEAT25 to enjoy 25% off your first order. Promotion ends April 30th, 2024.
Soleil, I'm sure that you're going to remember hearing about a woman who sued a fast food chain, McDonald's specifically, because, golly, the coffee was hot.
Oh, I remember this.
Oh, yeah. Let's start off with the facts. On February 27th, 1992, a woman named Stella Mae Liebeck experienced a significant burn from a 49-cent cup of coffee she bought from a McDonald's drive-thru in Albuquerque, New Mexico. The entire cup spilled in her lap, causing burns to her thighs, buttocks, and groin. In what widely became known as the McDonald's hot coffee case, Liebeck sued McDonald's, alleging that the company failed to warn her adequately about the risks of hot coffee. Fueled by persistent rumors, many media outlets portrayed Stella Liebeck as someone who was solely seeking financial gain through a frivolous lawsuit, contributing to a widespread perception that she was out for money. And this was a perception fueled by selective reporting, which ended up omitting really crucial details of the case. Now, what went overlooked and underreported for several decades was that Liebeck suffered third-degree burns on 6% of her skin and lesser burns over 16%. She was hospitalized for 8 days, undergoing skin grafting and losing nearly 20% of her body weight. Afterwards, she required care for 3 weeks and suffered permanent disfigurement, remaining partially disabled for 2 years. And I forgot to mention, she was in her 70s when this incident occurred. Also missing from the narrative is that Liebeck sought to settle with McDonald's initially for just $20,000 to cover her actual and anticipated expenses, and McDonald's counteroffered $800. When McDonald's refused to raise its offer, Liebeck and Texas attorney Reed Morgan filed suit in the U.S. District Court for the District of New Mexico, accusing McDonald's of gross negligence for selling coffee that was unreasonably dangerous and defectively manufactured. Morgan offered with McDonald's to settle for $300,000, and a mediator suggested $225,000 just before trial. McDonald's refused both offers, and so they proceeded. During the case, Liebeck's attorneys revealed McDonald's required its franchisees to hold coffee at temperatures ranging from 180 to 190 degrees Fahrenheit. They argued that coffee should not be served hotter than 140 degrees Fahrenheit, and that coffee served in other establishments in the area was significantly cooler than McDonald's coffee. Expert testimony said that coffee served at 180 degrees would cause burns in about 12 to 15 seconds, and coffee served closer to 190 degrees would cause third-degree burns in 3 seconds. Not a whole lot of reaction time if you're going to spill that coffee on your lap. Lowering the temperature to 160 degrees Fahrenheit would significantly reduce the risk of severe burns. McDonald's argued that the high temperature was necessary to keep coffee hot during commutes, yet evidence showed that most customers actually intended to consume the coffee immediately, discrediting this theory about, well, it'll cool down over time before they're ready to drink it. Documents revealed that McDonald's had received actually over 700 reports of people being burned by its coffee between 1982 and 1992, yet McDonald's corporate quality control manager suggested that the number of injuries was not significant enough to prompt a reevaluation of their practices. The outcome of all this, Liebeck was granted $200,000 in compensatory damages, later reduced to $160,000 because, according to the principles of comparative negligence that the jury used to determine the reward here, they considered Liebeck to actually be 20% at fault. So it was reduced by 20%. Additionally, she reserved $2.7 million in punitive damages. And the jurors arrived at this punitive damages figure based on her lawyer Morgan's suggestion that McDonald's should be penalized at least 2 days of coffee revenues, approximately $1.35 million per day. The judge later reduced the punitive damages to $480,000, three times the compensatory amount, totaling $640,000. Both McDonald's and Liebeck appealed this decision in December of 1994, but eventually settled out of court for an undisclosed sum. So we don't actually know how much she got. She was awarded $2.7 million. And believe me, I remember that hitting the headlines across the country about a woman being awarded nearly $3 million because of hot coffee. But actually, she probably received significantly less than that. Liebeck died on August 5th, 2004, at age 91. According to her daughter, both her injuries and the court proceedings drastically reduced her quality of life. Liebeck remained the so-called poster child for frivolous tort suits for the rest of her life. And McDonald's never changed the temperature of their coffee. What I find appalling about Liebeck's case is that there was so much of this detail about the actual extent of her injuries, about how her punitive reward was so deeply reduced by the court. I'm assuming it's somewhere between $600,000 and the $2.7 million she was awarded. I don't think she did receive all of that. And again, according to her daughter, that actually went towards having in-home care that she needed at the end of her life. So it's not a woman who went out and bought fur coats and yachts and lived a big life just because of a cup of coffee. She actually lived in pain for the rest of her life. I feel bad that that narrative came out so strongly against her, when in reality, McDonald's coffee was really, truly a little too hot. That was the basis of the case. And the fact that it's still being served above recommended temperatures is what I find really just fascinating. I have no proof. None of us have any proof of any kind of covert campaign on the behalf of McDonald's. But like I was saying earlier, sometimes when there's smoke, it's because there's a fire going on. And I can't imagine, given how hard McDonald's fought to refuse claims and counterclaim ridiculous amounts, that there wasn't somebody's effort on some part, whether from McDonald's or on behalf of them, that was thinking, hey, maybe if we discredit this person, we don't have to actually deal with the real issue, which is that we may be making a mistake in how we serve our coffee. Leigh, what do you remember about this case?
I absolutely remember rolling my eyes at this woman. I'm like, hello, what do you think? Coffee is hot. Of course it's going to burn you. I did not know that she was A, 78 years old. B, I didn't know how much time she had to spend in the hospital and that her burns were to the degree that they were. So again, we go back to this, what food brands, and as you mentioned, we don't know as we do with the egg board, because it was documented. They found emails.
They had emails, a lot of them.
But we don't have that in this case. But what we do have is we know that the story wasn't told in total. So we as consumers, we as listeners, didn't have the opportunity to form a fair concept of what was actually happening, a fair opinion of what was going on.
Which effectively reduces her choices. It's the
absolutely
some of the facts of the case that also went obscured or adjusted or taken out of the discourse for whatever reason, for media space or because it wasn't sexier. There's a lot of reasons, like details could have been removed from. It could have been intentional. It could also have been slightly accidental. But there's a big perception that she was driving and she just stuck a cup of coffee between her legs to move. Her grandson was actually driving the car. She was trying to put cream and sugar into her coffee, and she had popped the lid off and it overflowed. That is the actual technicalities of how she got burned, what was actually happening at the time. She was wearing sweatpants, and that held the hot liquid closer to her skin longer than if she was wearing a pair of jeans or something. It is a tragedy of errors, honestly, given the extent of it. But by removing all that detail, it gives us less of a chance to say, ooh, those cups are flimsy and maybe I should be using a cup holder rather than putting it onto my body. I didn't know that coffee was hot enough to cause third degree burns to any part of my skin within 3 to 15 seconds. That's how fast this burn likely happened if the coffee was fully at the temperature required by McDonald's to serve it at.
That's the issue here. It's choice,
right? We want to be able to choose to have egg or not in our sandwich spread. Because you can't call it mayonnaise. Either your veganese or your mayonnaise. We want to have the choice of what we put on our sandwiches. And then we want to have the full extent of knowledge possible to us to make wise decisions about where to put our coffee in the car when we're driving.
Agreed.
And that's why we have these types of legal tort cases in the case of Liebeck versus McDonald's, or you have the mislabeling type of case in Unilever versus Just Foods. This is where all this stuff comes from.
And like I said in our last episode, this is where I'm finding these things fascinating.
Yeah.
This is where, like you said, this is where these things come from. This is how they have been instituted and are being regulated within our society because of these types of things that are happening behind the scenes.
Yeah. It does make me wonder about the future of food. Things are cyclical. I think we are perhaps actually coming out of a phase of being thoroughly entranced by very traditional foods. We had talked about this actually over the years, the idea of, oh, it's like the way grandma made and the way mom made. But actually, the reality of that, when you talk about it, is my mom was of the generation past it, actually, where Campbell's had swooped in to make things a little bit easier for homemakers, and not just Campbell's, but other products that assembled pre-made, ready-made, easy-to-make types of foods. Part of what's compelling about veganism is the idea that it could use fewer resources for food production than traditional ways of cooking and eating. At the same time, it's also a more processed way of eating because you're going through 200 different types of vegetable protein to find the 11 that you can emulsify. Right. Forgive me for our vegan folks at home. That's not natural. That is contrived. Now, is that a problem? Probably not. It gives folks who need and who want a vegan diet options to have the foods that everybody else has. But I do have issue. Ooh, I have issues sometimes with calling things, you know, veganese, or can we call it something else? Can we call it something else that it is, which is emulsified peas, and have that be okay to have just as much as you have your eggy mayonnaise? Instead of slathering barbecue sauce on jackfruit and calling it vegan pulled pork, can it not be barbecued jackfruit? That actually tells you what you're eating instead of implying that you're eating something that you very clearly are not. Pulled pork is a very different thing from jackfruit. And it's okay to acknowledge that it's jackfruit and not actually pulled pork. If you're a vegetarian or a vegan, yeah, I want you to enjoy your food, but you don't have to say that it's something that's absolutely wholly not. That's where the mislabeling lawsuits are so valid. I don't agree with the American Egg Board and the extent to which that they tried to take down Just Mayo. Why can't we just let food be what it is? Why do we keep having to obscure it into something it's not?
Yeah, make up a new word. Bring a new jargon into this whole, it's a whole different lifestyle.
Yeah.
So create your own dictionary.
Yeah, rather than following in the footsteps of a animal protein-centric diet, which folks are clearly not wanting to do, create new words, make new recipes, more blessings to you. I think it would be really cool to have a whole bunch of new things to bring that were not bouillabaisse. It's not mayonnaise. It's not actually jams. It's not actually vinegar. Then make it something else and let that be the new thing. I'm stepping off my soapbox now. Yeah. Thank you for spending some time with us today. We are both so excited to be bringing you some fascinating stories at the intersection of food and crime and ways that our food can quickly turn dangerous and deviant. For more information about today's episode, check out our website at asweeat.com, follow us on Instagram at asweeat, and please join our family recipes, traditions, and food lore community on Facebook. I want to hear what you remember hearing about the Liebeck case.
And so you don't miss an episode, subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. And if you could spare a few minutes to rate the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or Spotify, we would be so appreciative. It really helps us with our goal of podcast domination.
We also publish the As We Eat Journal on Substack, and we would be very honored if you would support us by becoming a subscriber. We take tasty side trips through discoveries, table talks, food and art, vintage recipes, and so much more. We're sure you'll find one that's perfect for you at asweeat.substack.com.
You've been listening to the As We Eat podcast, part of our curiosity-driven project, serving up how food connects, defines, and inspires by blending a bit of research with a dash of humor, maybe an egg or two, maybe some pea protein, but a whole lot of passion. Ba ba da da ba 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 da ba.